Good morning, everybody. Happy Sunday. This has turned into quite an eventful day if you're a Chicago sports fan. Both you have the Bears playing, and then unfortunately the Cubs need to win today to not have to have a play-in game to do a wild card. So thank you for spending your morning with us in preparation for the emotions for later today. I have something else planned to talk about this morning that I had planned to talk about in the past. But Vince and I were chatting this week after Wednesday with all that had been going on with the Kavanaugh hearings, and felt just a need for a second to just take a breath and have some space as a community. And mostly because we just noticed that it kept on coming to the forefront with the people that we knew in the community. And so what I just want to say here is where we see our responsibility as a community is to create space for people here to process emotions they have, to create space here for people to find healing where there has been wounding, a place here for people to feel like they are seen and cared for. And so what we don't see is our goal is to come up here and state our positions on everything and say this is what we think is our like objective stances on everything. And what I think that looks like, I actually get it from Jesus. And I think where Jesus models something for us to learn from is when there is a time to stand with somebody, those that he chooses to stand with are the powerless, those whose voices aren't listened to. And that's what we believe our responsibility is as a community to do, is to say for the people with us here and for those of us in our lives, we want to create a place and a space where you can bring to the table your hurts, your woundings. We believe Jesus wants to say you are seen, you are valued, you are cared for, and that whenever power comes into play in those questions, I think Jesus modeled for us on where we should stand in that, and that we need to stand in the place of making sure that people are not overseen. And so what I would like to do is I just want to pray for a second. I want to pray, first of all, just for the, I don't know, but I just felt every time I encountered the news or something public this week, I walked away with kind of a sunken heart, just an icky feeling, something I think is just kind of common in our world and our country in the last few years, is seeing public discourse and walking away feeling discouraged and sad. And I also want to create space because this isn't just like some abstract political issue of what do you think about Supreme Court justice and what do you think about a woman accusing him of sexual misconduct. No, this is a specific thing that I think one thing Vince and I wrestled with is like, how do we address this when the reality is something like this does and will keep on coming up about every month? And that's because the reality is, for as long as there has been power and dynamics within humanity that has been favoring one group over the other, there has been people that abuse that. And there has been people that will use that in inappropriate ways. And so I actually don't think that we're like in an influx of this in our country right now. I just think we are in a place where finally there is some permission for some people to actually talk about what has been true and will continue to be true. And so I just want to pray for anybody that feels affected by it personally, that like what this brings up has nothing to do with about our political stage, but has to do with an injury to themselves. And so I believe that that is where Jesus lives. And I want to pray that with us for those that would like to join in with me this morning. Jesus, you are gracious and compassionate. And I believe that you see each one of us and you see the wounds and the hurts that we feel. And I believe that you do have a mission in this world to bring care, to bring value, to bring worth to all of us. And I ask that for anybody in this room that the public discourse this last week left them feeling missed, left them feeling like they were less seen or their hurts were somehow invalidated. I ask for forgiveness on behalf of this country and on behalf of people that talk more about the politics and the implications than seeing the human beings. And I ask for space for us as a community to learn how to walk alongside people that exist in a place where not only are people being wounded and hurt and left short because of issues around power and privilege, but also a community that seems to miss so frequently, a country that seems to miss so frequently what the actual implications on a person's soul and an actual implication on what this means for the individual. That's why I'm so thankful for you, Jesus, that it's both the God of the universe that sees everything and all things, but is also able to see each one of us and see the value and the worth. And so I ask that you would help us stand with you in this. And Jesus, today, if this is a space for healing, if this is a space for decompression, a space to maybe let go of some of the vile and the, I don't know, just feels like every time I open myself up to receive things from our wider world right now, it gets filled up with like bile in some way. And Jesus, I just exhale right now. That my concern is less about being right or wrong, and it is more about seeing people in this room for who they are and seeing people for the value they have, and helping them discover the life and the fullness and the healing that you have for them as their beloved, beloved parent. And just whatever it looks like for us to receive that this morning, I ask for your help in that. Amen. Thanks for praying that with me. It just has felt heavy on myself. And I think the truth is, this is not going to be like the last time that we as a corporate people of Americans have to process something around abuses of powers and accusations and the realities of things like sexual assault. So, as I said, I did have something else prepared for us today. And I'm just gonna pray real briefly one more time. I just find prayer to be an immensely helpful thing. Jesus, now I pray that whatever words I have to share with us this morning would be in service of what you are doing this morning, and that they would lead us into connection with you and lead us into connection with each other, that it would challenge us and maybe give us peace and maybe give us a sense of not being alone in this life, and that you would be wonderful in the ways that you protect us in how, as humans, we can be missed just by having a different life and a different story and a different experience. And so in whatever way I surely will miss some today, that you would be gracious and still meet us in that. Amen. So today I actually do want to talk about something that I referenced in one of my talks over the summer. I was talking about how my life was changed learning more about how to pray and pursue God the way that the Eastern Church has historically taught people to, which is very different from what I and likely most of us here have experienced in America. This is what we would call the Western world in America. Europe and the Western world is often called that. And whether you have lots of experience to religion or very little experience to religion, my guess is if you grew up in America, your default assumptions and the default perspectives you had are going to be extremely influenced by growing up in the Western world. Mine is certainly that story. And so I want to tell you a little bit about what I mean when I said I learned something that felt really helpful. I encountered something that felt telling based on how I had grown up. I've talked about this in the past, but I do think that how I grew up is somewhat typical of people that grew up highly involved in the church culture in the Western world. Growing up, for me, it was a pretty typical thing to have most of my questions around faith revolve around in and out, right versus wrong, acceptable versus unacceptable. Like, those were the stakes of faith. My experience was focused on figuring out what was in and what was out, who was in and who was out. And how I, as somebody who clearly was in, can manage to deal with all of those who are out. How do I navigate a world full of out people? And I did understand other things mattered to some degree. I did understand that things like justice and caring for those in need mattered. Jesus seemed to talk about that a lot, and it felt kind of inconsistent to my belief to totally disregard that. But I think what felt true is nothing felt more pressing. No question felt more urgent than for me to define these in and out questions. And if you're somebody here who didn't grow up going to church, if you didn't grow up in a highly religious environment, perhaps you've met somebody like who I was, and I just want to say sorry. Because I will say for myself, this led me into a deeply dissatisfied place, a place that had me fed up with faith, and fed up with church. And it only got worse as I got older and interacted with more and more people that came from different experiences of life. I felt like a lot of my clear answers, and I had a lot of very clear answers, broke down against my experience of reality. I was often left in a position where I had to reinterpret reality differently or reinterpret my answers differently. I was having a hard time in life as these questions arose, and as I was growing up as a human being, having a hard time. And when I looked around me, I had friends that were Christians, friends that were very defined in that in-group. And they seemed to be shallow and mean and judgmental as I was struggling. They just seemed to not actually be there for me. They were more concerned with me showing up to the church events that they were doing. And then I had friends that were very, I would say, self-proclaimed and avidly out of whatever in-group I was trying to create. And in those moments of struggle, they were present and caring. They were there for me, supporting me. And then I looked at the choices they were making in life, and I started to notice they were doing things like taking a year off and joining the Peace Corps and spending their time volunteering at homeless pantries. And I started to see these people are actually trying to make a difference in the world. And then I looked back again at my friends who are self-proclaimed Christians and seemed to be more concerned with just living within the bubble of their church. And then I started to travel. I started to go into different countries and connect with more and more people that had even more and more diverse experiences and backgrounds of life. And then one thing really caught me up in particular is I grew up going to church. And what caught me off guard was the first time I encountered people that went to different kinds of churches. There's something you can dismiss, particularly if you grew up like I grew up, when somebody thinks really differently than you but doesn't proclaim to believe in Jesus. There's like a level of you just disregard what they say. I think that's damaging, and I think today that that's wrong. But at the time, it felt easy to disregard. What felt harder to disregard, what actually felt more challenging to me, was learning more about other people who followed Jesus. Other traditions. I started to learn about my friends who were Methodists and Catholics and Presbyterians and Evangelicals and what I was, a Vineyard. And the funny part was I started to realize that even people in other Vineyard churches didn't quite think the same way I thought. And I really struggled with how these places, these other people, spent almost as much energy as I did obsessing about what the right answers were. What are the clear defining lines of in and out, right and wrong, acceptable and unacceptable? They were just as concerned as I was, except they had different answers. It felt very confusing to realize that we were all so certain, but not the same levels of certain on different things. The different things seemed to matter more to different people. And all of this, from my framework of certainty, felt like it shook everything. If you were with us over the summer here at BLV, you've heard me describe this in the past. I've talked about this as a pretty significant part of my life and my journey of faith. And I describe this as a crisis point. And it's a crisis I've actually heard many people I know talk about. Wanting to be a person of faith, finding faith helpful, finding spirituality to be a part of life that felt essential, being drawn to Jesus, even having experiences of a living God. But what seemed to be communicated as the crucial part of following faith, the crucial part of following Jesus, was other things I just felt like I couldn't stomach. Namely, having to present a front of certainty in my answers that I actually didn't feel. And so I decided, as many people I know decide, I don't really have an issue with Jesus. I don't really have an issue with God or faith. I didn't even really have an issue with, like, Christianity as a concept, but I decided that I had an issue with church, and I was done with it. And it was at that point I met a man that profoundly impacted my life. His name is Dr. Bradley Nassif. He's a professor at North Park University, where I went to undergrad. Met my wife there. Probably the best thing I did in that time there. But he taught theology, the study of God and thoughts about God. And I'm in this point of crisis. I had just spent a year abroad discovering more and more how differently people thought about faith, even from my own tradition, really rocking everything I thought to be true and hold on to. And one day after class, a beauty of a small school is things like these happen. I stopped after class and I said to him, I asked him a question. I don't even remember what the question was, but he had mentioned something about God. And I said, I really struggle with that. And he said, would you like to grab some coffee with me? And I said, yeah. So we went and grabbed coffee at a little coffee shop named Trey Kroner that's still there on Foster. And he started to say, so tell me what's going on with you. I can tell you're kind of struggling with a lot of these things we're talking about in theology, the study of God. And I said, you know, I told him a little bit of what I just told you of. And essentially, I came down to the point of, I don't really know if I'm ever going to be sure about any of it. And then he said something to me which has greatly changed the way I've thought about things since. And he said, I wonder if figuring out the right answers is not really the problem for you. I wonder if it's actually whether you're asking the right questions. And then he said, let me tell you a little bit about myself. He was trying to tell me about where he came from. You see, he grew up in the Eastern Orthodox background. He's actually the only professor in the United States, at least at the time, perhaps there's been somebody that has joined him since, that has a degree from an Eastern Orthodox university, an evangelical Christian university, and a public state university. And so he talked a little bit about, for somebody now, he went to something that would be probably considered kind of an evangelical Christian church today, but he said, I have not let go of my Eastern Orthodox root growing up, and let me tell you why this helps me so much. And this led me onto a journey of several years of spending a lot of time with Brad and learning what he could teach me about what I might be able to learn. He said, it's not so much that the Eastern tradition comes up with different answers, that there's like different beliefs in the Eastern church. That's not so much the truth. It's just that they tend to ask different types of questions that the Western church asks. You see, after the Eastern church separated from the Western Catholic Church, you see, roughly broken down into Orthodox and Catholic, and all, the majority of American religion, majority of American Christianity will find its root in Catholicism and then the Reformation around 1500. You see, when these two things broke apart, there started to be, as time goes on, just slightly different emphasis, slightly different focus on the types of things people are wrestling with. See, in the West, things got more and more hyper-focused on the certainty of faith, the knowability of God. Like, how do I define how I understand God? What are the correct understandings of God? In the West, they got more and more and more concerned with those types of questions. And as the Western Church, which is most of North America and Europe, advanced in the context of the Enlightenment, it became known for this. And the belief is that we can and should understand as much as we can about God, that in following him, one of our primary purposes is to clearly define and understand what following him looks like. You go back to some of my upbringing, a lot of those questions of in and out, right, wrong, that was my very Western experience growing up, those types of questions. And this kind of focus on certainty and the knowability of God, and then the inevitable reality that we will disagree on that, is a big reason that he credited that in the West, there's something between 10 to 35,000 different denominations. That each time they came up with a different answer, they would split and do something different. Now, certainly there were some divisions in the Eastern Church, but nothing on the scale of the West. And most of them seem to be more tied to political and geographical rule, like the Romanian Orthodox Church versus the Serbian Orthodox Church. And Dr. Nassif, what he suggested to me, this is an incredibly oversimplified and summarized version of what's happening over thousands of years. But essentially what he suggested to me is the part of this that is helpful for me today is that while the West got more and more concerned with defining faith, the certainty and knowability on God, the East was always more focused on the mystery of God and the limit of human understanding. So for example, the Bible seemed to captivate and animate the East and the West differently. The East would lean into passages like Ecclesiastes 8:16. When I tried to gain wisdom and to observe the activity on earth, and even though it prevents anyone from sleeping, day or night, then I discerned all that God had done. No one really comprehends what happens on earth. Despite all human effort to discover it, no one can ever grasp it. Even if a wise person claimed that he understood, he would not really comprehend it. Do you hear the mystery and the unknowability of God and life in that? What his pitch was to me is that this was the gift that the Eastern Church had for those of us that grew up in the West. In the East, not knowing something was not a threat to be snuffed out. That was just life. And we must learn to embrace that. Or you think about the life of Jesus. The East would lean heavily into the way that John's gospel reports Jesus saying something very mystical. I am the truth. I am the way, I am the life, which is very different. I think if Jesus was like a Western thinker, he would have said, I will teach you the truth. I will teach you the life. No, I am. It is this kind of mystical interaction with an actual being. So the power in this is that God is so much bigger and grander than humans can ever understand. That is true. And that we find God, we actually find a mystical encounter with him when we surrender control and we surrender our demand to know all. One thing I have greatly been influenced is that I find God when I don't have the answers, not because I do. And this shift in focus has had a massive difference in the kinds of question one asks about faith. It moves away from in and out, correct and incorrect, acceptable and unacceptable, not because those things don't matter, but just there's an awareness of human fallibility and there's an awareness of our limit to really understand that. And in the East, there's always been a more focus on journey. There's an ancient Eastern monastic writer who wrote a book called The Ladder of Divine Ascent. It's about life is an everlasting progression. It's not about understanding the rules of the game. It's about looking to a living God for help to move forward today. You know, there's a big concept in the Eastern Church called divinization. Divine, the word for God. So divinization is essentially the task for humanity to become more and more like God every day. And in the end, join in holy union with him. In short, it is asking the question, how do I become more like Jesus today than I was yesterday? And how will I become more like him tomorrow than I was today? This is the journey of life. This is the task of humanity. How do I keep taking steps forward in maturity? It's not about crossing some imaginary threshold. It's not trying to figure out, am I in and will I always stay in? Those are kind of silly questions that we can actually never truly know the answer to. The goal is not to reach the magic plateau. No, the goal is to move forward each day towards life that is more like and more with Jesus. And as I learn more, I think Dr. Nassif was right about this. There's something about this that really grabbed me in a way that all of my years focused on certainty did not. And so I tried to lean into the Eastern tradition a bit, as much as I could. I even tried to go to an Eastern Orthodox church for a while, and then I realized that no church is perfect, that there was concepts that I liked there, but there was also lots of other things that I found challenging. So this isn't a glorification of, like, really, we are now transitioning to the Eastern Orthodox denomination. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, as a Westerner, I think we deserve and should push ourselves to consider our blind spots. And I think other traditions can help us do that, particularly other traditions we're not a part of. So I started to try to lean into the mystery of God, lean into the mystery of life, the uncertainty of things, that the best questions I can ask are actually not about understanding. It's not about working out what the truths are that I can articulate perfectly, but rather asking, how can I be healthier today than I was yesterday? How can I be more compassionate today than I was yesterday? How can I be more mature? How can I be more resilient? How can I be more like Jesus? And what felt necessary in that, which is different, I can actually learn a lot about God without actually having to have him part of the equation at all. I just read some books, do some logic. This other one required interaction. I had to actually interact with a God that I had to experience as living. And I want to tell you how this played out for me. It has changed my relationship, first off, to uncertainty. And secondly, it has significantly changed the way I pray. So this is a reality of life that I don't actually have to convince you of. Life is full of uncertainty. Uncertainty in our job. Will I get this job? Will I like it? Will I get that promotion? Will I get fired? Uncertainty in our relationships. Will I find somebody? Will that be the right somebody? Will it work out? What will the struggles be? Will we overcome them? Uncertainty in our health. What happens if I get sick? Will I get sick? And the most obvious spoiler of all time is we don't know. We can't. It is literally impossible for us to know. Uncertainty is maybe the only certainty we have in life. It's inevitable. We will encounter things we cannot understand. And we will have questions about our life that certainly in the present we won't be able to answer. And so what do we do when we feel uncertain? How do we handle this human experience? Well, I can tell you what I did. You know, the big ways that I used to deal with it when I was trying to resist it as much as I could. You know, first big thing is I would fix things. I don't know if you're a fixer, but I'm a fixer. Somebody can't just tell me a problem. It is an invitation for me to fix that problem. Oh, you're upset with me. You know what? I will make up for it. You know, I'm going to say sorry, and now it's fixed. But, you know, that's great. We should say sorry when we get things wrong. But the reality is I can't fix how you feel. I don't have control over you being upset. That's not something I can change. I can own what I did, but I can't actually fix how you feel. And I don't know if you've ever done this. Like, I said I'm sorry. Well, I did the laundry eventually. It doesn't actually change the reality. I can't fix that. But me as a Westerner is like, well, this is a math equation. Another thing I used to do a lot is I would grab certainty in areas that I could control. This is why I love spreadsheets. There is nothing more enjoyable than putting together a work budget when you've had like a really tense family conflict. Because it's like, I don't even know how I'm going to navigate that conflict with my brother. But you know what I can do? Put this formula in and figure out what the numbers add up to. Done, complete, controlled. Or when I'm feeling uncertain about work, nobody else is going to experience the brunt end of my uncertainty like that customer service person I talked to. I will get a lower rate on my internet. I may not be able to control this promotion, but I can control me extending my promotional period. This was actually probably most true for me when I was younger. This is actually probably the thing that led me into a point of crisis. And I think what I think gave life to this was not something bad. I think it was people trying to assuage my uncertainty as a child, which is I'm uncertain about something, and then somebody would say back to me, well, I am certain. some level of they would state their certainty in the face of my uncertainty because that's what I needed. I'm not really sure what I think about this. Well, let me tell you what's true, and I'm 100% certain. And so I reflected that. I actually started to overcompensate for uncertainty by speaking certainty. Like if I say I believe this enough, then maybe my mind will believe it. Like I'll drown out the noise of my questions with the noise of my answers. Now today, thanks largely to my efforts to lean into this Eastern perspective of mystery and certainty, I actually deal with uncertainty quite differently today, or at least I'd say I attempt to deal with it differently. When I feel uncertain, when I feel out of control, I try to use that as a signal to let go, not grab tighter. Not to fix, not to figure out what I can do, but using it as an invitation to get in touch with the limits of who I am. And I'll say when I can do that, nothing in the world has ever made me feel more connected with the mysterious God of the universe than getting in touch with my limits. I try to let that uncertainty lead me towards surrender and humility. Let it be another example of the many examples that I don't know everything, that I need help. And it's actually become the signal of like, do I feel uncertain? Now I need to pray. It has almost been like the call and response in my head of uncertainty, lack of control is like my, oh, you know what? I probably should pray right now. It's been my signal for that. And how I pray is actually different than how I used to pray. Before I tried to lean into uncertainty, almost all of my prayer was about changing circumstance. I'm not sure how that promotion's going to work out, so God, grant me favor with my bosses so that I get that promotion. I'm not going to say that's not a bad prayer, that's a great prayer. Absolutely. However, after I started to leave into uncertainty, I realized, like, what happens if that doesn't work out? What do I need then? Or, you know what? Let's say God answers my prayer. But promotions don't come in for another 2 months. Am I just living in anxiety for 2 months to figure out if that works out? There's uncertainty built into this. So how do I deal with that? I would lean into it and I would pray, God, yes, I would love to find that promotion. But in the meantime, help me find peace and help me not feel alone. I was talking to Vince earlier and he said, what are the things you pray for more than anything in the world? And I said, I thought about it for a while and I said, I pray for peace and I pray not to feel alone more than anything in the world. There's almost no prayer that I pray that does not include, Lord, give me peace in the meantime and help me not feel alone regardless of how this works out. And it is amazingly helpful. It has changed things so much for me. The result is I actually pray for what I need in that moment, not just for my life to pan out. Because when I'm praying for life to pan out, there's kind of like a one solution for that to go well, that I get that promotion. That is it. But praying for peace and not to feel alone in the midst of that, I've actually found that God ends up being far more dynamic in how he meets me. My prayer life actually feels far more interactive and alive and less like a checklist. These are the things that I want. I'm praying for these. And more like, hey, God, I want to have peace right now. Help me find that. That's an innately more interactive prayer. And it's also put me in a position to say, you know what? I would love this promotion. But actually, God, the question isn't necessarily what I get this promotion or not get this promotion, but like what is there for me today? What does it look like for me to actually take a step forward in my life? And I'm going to presume, because the evidence says so, that I'm not always the greatest narrator to believe about what is the next best step for my life. And the result of this is I do just feel like my prayer life feels more vibrant. I feel like God shows up more frequently because it isn't quite a positive or negative outcome. It's a far more dynamic outcome. And I just want to say one more time that I don't think that the Western tradition is bad or that the Eastern tradition is all good. I don't think pursuing answers and knowledge is bad. And as much as the Eastern tradition likes to say they're about mystery, they're also human, and humans love to figure out who's in and out. The knowability of God, what the Western church has leaned into, can help him feel closer. It can help him not be this abstract thing. The unknowability of God can sometimes feel alienating. I'm not saying that we should totally reject one and lean into the other. I'm just saying that as Westerners, we're not really at risk of going too far Eastern. It's just, we could actually spend 100% of our effort trying to live out Eastern mystical thinking, and we would maybe end up 50-50. Because of how we were raised, how our brains were wired, are so entrenched in the Western tradition that we're not going to just leave it behind, even with effort. And so my suggestion here is to lean into the mystery. Lean into uncertainty. Let your faith be built off of not having answers, not having them. And obviously, when I think about this right now, maybe not obviously, but when I think about this now, and I think about the last year, and I try to think about what are the big picture uncertainties that feel most pressing to me. There's certainly plenty in my life. But I think one thing that does stir up a lot of uncertainty is what we talked about at the beginning. I feel a lot of uncertainty about where our country is, where our country is going. You know, there's times where I feel hopeful, like with the rise of the Me Too movement. I feel for a moment that we are moving forward. You know, Martin Luther King said, "The arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice." Like, I believe maybe we're bending towards that right now. And then there's moments like I experienced in this last week where I see people blaming or calling out victims of sexual assault. Or I hear men, non-ironically, saying things like, "Us white Christian males are under attack." And in these moments, I feel afraid and I feel uncertain. I look at my daughter and it brings fear up in me. And I wonder if you resonate with that at all. 100% everybody here is going to resonate. There's something in your life you feel uncertain about. But big picture, I wonder if you feel uncertain about the big picture of where we're at. And I want to invite you with me that we pray that circumstances change, that we pray that the way that power and privilege work in our country shift. But in the meantime, that we also pray for a sense of peace, a sense of not feeling alone. You know what really struck me about this last week was how many people talk about how isolating it felt. People that talked about having experiences around sexual assault and seeing the reaction of this last week and feeling more alone because of it. And the thing about uncertainty is I think uncertainty is innately isolating. And I think if we could feel less alone, if we could feel a sense of peace and comfort from other people, from the living God, then I think what we could find is space to keep advocating, to keep speaking up, to keep praying that God shows up, but also not let the uncertainty of what's going to happen rob us from a hope that change can happen. And I think that if we don't let uncertainty be the thing that catches us up, that we will find a greater sense of resilience. I think we'll find a greater invitation to find Jesus as a living God that interacts with us, that cares more about who we are than our opinions on things. I think what we'll find is an invitation to interact honestly with the people around us, even when we don't have it figured out. That it's not like I will figure out the answers and then bring it to the people in my life. What I'd love to do is invite the band up here, and I'm going to invite you guys to stand with me, and I'd like to pray along those lines. So if everyone's going to stand with me, And I'll invite up those that are going to do music. We're going to enter into a time of prayer and singing now. Elizabeth, Sergio are going to, and Lester are going to lead us in music. We find it to be an amazing way to engage us in a way that my words simply will never engage us. We find it to be a space where we can often get our whole beings engaged. And as that's going on, we invite you to participate in whatever way you see fit. If you want to stand up, if you want to dance, if you have a flag with you, you can wave it. I don't know why I went with flags. But if you would rather sit back and let the music hit you and have this be a more reflective space, that's totally fine too. And as that's going on, we're going to have a team of folks in that middle section available to pray. And if anything I said struck a chord with you, if anything that happened this week around the Kavanaugh hearings struck a chord with you, I would invite you to have one of these really safe, kind people pray with you. We find that God tends to show up in surprising ways when we invite somebody else into that. I think it speaks to the innate kind of relational nature of God. And Jesus, I just ask right now for all of us, in all of the ways that we feel uncertain, and all of the ways we don't have the answers, and all the anxieties that stir up within us, I pray right now for some peace, for some healing, and I pray that right now we would just feel less alone. That experience of not knowing, the awareness of our lack of control would lead us into your arms. That there would be a sense of, I don't understand, I can't figure it out, I need help. And that you would be eager to meet us in that. As a living God, who brings healing and restoration. And if anybody here has been wounded by versions of faith that were built on certainty, versions of faith that were built on having all the answers, Jesus, I just ask for help to release kind of the toxic bile that we might have built up in us around that. And lastly, Jesus, I ask that you would challenge us today to be more like you than we were yesterday. And you would challenge us tomorrow to be more like you than we were today. And that faith would not be something we can write on a chalkboard, but faith would be something that has to be lived out and growing in who we are. And we would be surprised on how many things we do write on the chalkboard that actually get new life. And we ask for you to be with us and how uncertain that might feel. Amen.